it all become sort of where I got the job to do that. I don't know. I can't even remember how it came about, but we used to laugh about it. Exactly. So what happened after a couple of years, they sold the theatre. So Capital sold the theatre, and they asked me to go up to what was then Euston Tower, where the Capital radio station was. But they wanted me to work full time, and I went, and they wanted to give me a job as concert man. It was just nuts. In 2 years, I'd made a lot of, you know, I'd built up, I used to work really hard, and I'd built a lot of relationships with all the promoters of the time. And so anyway, I've ended up in Euston Tower. The only person that they would allow 2 days a week, I continued my 2 days a week at Capital Radio. I was in radio and music and never expected anything. So another world had opened up to me of radio, and I had the best time. Like, it was amazing. But then I'd leave work. Everyone else was sort of, you know, none of my children, I don't think, really. Very few of my children. So, at 5, I'd go home. Everyone would be out. Oh, can we have a drink? I'd go, no, I'm going home. I've got family. And I loved my two worlds that I had. I had these two amazing worlds, and it was brilliant. And then circumstances at home evolved. So that went on for a couple of years. And then there was a recession, and we lost our home in the recession. So it was a bad time, and I needed to earn more money. And Capital offered me more time to work at Capital. So I ended up, through necessity, building a career at Capital and becoming the head of entertainment there. And I was there in the end for 10 years. And Party in the Park, Hyde Park was my project. The first ever one in Hyde Park was my project that they asked me to start at the radio station. So that's how I got into being involved with a live music event. And I fell in love. I absolutely fell in love with watching the site build. Building a greenfield site, seeing that turn into a place where there was characters turning up and suppliers, and gradually every day the world would build. And it was so exciting that I couldn't get it out of my head. And by then, I'd got a really, really good job at Capital. I was with money. I had a whole department. I was like... I went to my boss and I went, I need to leave. I want to leave. I want to start my own business. I want to learn how to build wealth. Yeah. And like, everyone's going, oh, you can't leave. We've just done this. 100,000 people came into Hyde Park. It was amazing to be part of that. But I eventually persuaded them I really needed to do this. It just was driving me nuts in my head. I needed to do it. And so I signed a 2-year contract to continue project managing Party in the Park. So that gave, you know, the business a really good, really great start. And a colleague of mine who I used to work with, Deb, she came in and working with me. So we set up the business, and that's how we started Entity, the company, called the company, and then set about learning how to build worlds. And that continued, and getting lots of projects. Still doing Party in the Park. Years passed with lots of other projects and stuff. And then I was asked by a promoter, UK promoter called Vince Power, who was Reading, Leeds. So he'd started Reading and Leeds festivals, and, you know, he was a big UK promoter. And he and I become friends for my Capital years when I used to come on air. And then by the time he wanted to start his own festival, I'd got a lot under my belt, a lot of experience under my belt, and he asked me if I'd become his festival director for his festival called the Hop Farm in Paddock Wood. And that festival was a 5-year unbelievable experience for me, because there was Neil Young, Bob Dylan, Mumford and Son on the beginning of the Florence and the Machine. And Prince's only ever UK festival he ever did. His only festival he ever did in the UK. So having Prince, I mean, it was just such a massive career high. So that lasted for 5 years. And then that ended. And then I continued to obviously running projects of my own in the business. So That's kind of the journey to get to Black Deer for a chance conversation a few years later in a party I was holding at our house. I had a conversation with a lovely guy called Colin Lloyd, who'd retired. He was the uncle of one of my mates. And she said, oh, would you mind if I brought my uncle? And I went, oh, he's fine. We ended up speaking for ages together about the fact that he absolutely loved country music. And his background was he'd had his own marketing company. He'd, over the years, he was really successful. He'd become quite financially stable because of it. But he brought Marlboro cigarettes and Budweiser into the UK for his agency. So he used to go on the ranches and be out in America. And then I told him about my love for Americana music, Americana roots, country blues and that kind of music. And then he said to me about, oh, you used to run the Hop Farm Festival, didn't you? And I went, yeah. And he said, would you ever get involved in a festival again? He said, because there's nothing around that's like got that music. And I said, well, it's the only genre, I believe, and this is going back to 2017. I said, it's the only genre, I believe, that's got growth in it. Because everything else is pretty much sort of, you know, the level of similar artists playing. I mean, there's obviously lots of different genres, but nobody had actually encapsulated that genre and done anything with it. Because it was always a bit like, oh, people used to be a bit like a bit of a guilty pleasure if you liked a bit of country music. Yeah. So that was the kind of way that conversation started. And I said, the only way I'd ever do anything is if it was a place that I believe is magical, that it was financed, and it was that genre. And that I only could do something at high production values, because I believe that the only positioning you could go into the marketplace at that point was a few levels up from starting from the ground level. Yeah. And that's the conversation started. Into the evening, he said, Jill, if I put some seed money in, do you think we'd investigate it a bit more? And I said, yes, absolutely. And that's kind of how Black Deer started its life.
I think I definitely need to take some notes from you on how to make an amazing cup of tea if it's done from handing out letters in Covent Garden all the way. Because that's such a vast ladder to climb as well. I mean, like you said, you worked all your way up to being head of entertainment at Capitol, and you were there for years. And obviously that then led into Party in the Park. And the first Party in the Park was absolutely under your care. How would you then say that the festival scene has grown and has changed since that event?
To be fair, at that point, there wasn't many festivals. I can't really recall a camping festival as such in that period of time. So over the years, things started to develop into, you know, music, camping, starting off relatively small, but then there was Red in Leeds. There was the bigger festivals were starting to gain momentum, becoming, but that kind of evolved over all these years. I mean, it's been quite a few years. So now the market is full of festivals. Everyone's doing a festival. You know, everywhere you look, there's a festival or a new festival that started. I mean, we're in a saturated market. Unfortunately, I do believe we're also in a market where it's very, very, we're very vulnerable, because to put a festival on, and the problem we have is people do not realise the volume of work that goes into it, how many people are involved. Some people think you just ring up and have a stage, and then you ring up the artist shop and go, oh, I like that one, and then it all just happens. It doesn't. It takes, you know, it takes a year of planning. It takes a hell of a lot of people's time to make it all work. And you have to think about safety. I mean, safety is a massive thing now on site, and it should be, and rightly so. But every year there's more legislation comes in. You as a promoter or, organiser of a festival, there's so much responsibility involved with it.
And now, in 2018, you then set up the Black Deer Festival. However, your relationship with the space didn't start in 2018. You've got quite a history of the place. I know you've got quite a close relationship with the family who own the estate. The estate's owned by Christopher Neville, Marquess of Abergynevi. How was the conversation of creating a festival on the ground presented to them?
Well, when I started talking to Colin Lloyd about this idea, and I'd been working with the estate to help them bring promoters onto the site to look at that as a viable festival site, because the estate had always wanted to have almost like a festival there, something that would grow within the estate. So I was bringing promoters, and a few things happened, and it didn't work out. People come on the site and they'd be... Or an event, and I kept looking at it thinking, because I was their consultant, so they asked me to be custodian of their licenses. So if anything come on production wise, because of my experience obviously with Hop Farm and everything like that, it was one of my projects was to work with them to be that custodian. And I used to look and think, oh, I'd do this or I'd do that, but never say anything, obviously. I never ever imagined that one day that I would be producing a festival there. So it was almost they wanted something to happen there, but the things that had happened in the past never really gelled. It didn't quite work. So when I said to them, I want to bring a festival here, they went, because they also loved the genre that I wanted to bring, because it was very in keeping with the estate and, you know, the neighbours nearby. It's not like drum and bass, or, you know, there'd been some festivals that come in and events that come in, the neighbours all complain. So I kind of knew that it would fit into that world.
Just one.
festivals, let alone ones of this scale. And the way the festival grows, anyone can tell that it's fueled by passion. Again, that there is such a healthy personal interest from yourself concerning the genre. How did Americana music become such a big part of your life?
When I was a young girl, I grew up with this music. This music was the soundtrack to being a young girl. The first music I ever heard was that whole blues music, roots, country. And my brother, who's older than me, he loved this music. And he could pick up an instrument and play. So him and his mates used to be at our house all the time, always writing songs and playing the music. And I used to laugh, obviously I was a kid looking at them thinking, oh my God, this is amazing. It was very much all of our family loved the music. And then horrendously, when my brother was 19, He had some circumstances, he died, and our whole family life changed. I mean, it was beyond measure. That touches a family, it's beyond, and it's sudden, and it's brutal, and you reel from that pain, and it stays with you forever. But when it stopped, because it's painful to listen to that for many years, that music sort of in my family, it sort of stopped being played. But it's been so in my heart always. And obviously that eases over years, and then it becomes music that reminds you of all the good things. So it's always been in my heart. So this music, being able to take this music and bring it into something so many years later, that I absolutely love, and I love nurturing artists that are starting out and seeing where they can go. And that was the ethos when Debs, who I was speaking about earlier, she's the co-founder, and it was something that we really wanted to make sure that we addressed.
Female festival founders, female representation concerning behind the scene music roles are growing. However, the percentage is still a lot lower than the male percentage in these kind of roles. Have you ever faced any barriers concerning not just this festival, but any festival you've ever been part of?
As a woman?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Luckily, I've got a lot of humour. Look. There's no getting away from the fact there's an imbalance. There's been an imbalance over the years, but I also look at the other side of that. I was a mum, so there were certain compromises I wanted because I wanted to be with my family, and I wasn't, so career driven. And I'm generalising now, but and wanting to still have a career, I totally get that. But sometimes the balance is too far in favour of the guy. That's how it was, that's just how it was. But in terms of being confident as a person for myself, and I can only speak for myself, I never let anything get to me. So, I'd go into a meeting, a council meeting, to get a, plans passed to put an event on somewhere. And 9 times out of 10, they would look at the site manager I brought in, who's working for me, and they'd want to talk to him. And it was just like, I found that like, but as I said, I treated it with humour. By the end of the meeting, they would know who was, because the site manager had gold jewel, so by the end, but it was almost like you could guarantee that would be the sort of way of it. It never stopped me, or I've done everything that I wanted to do, and I've never felt held back. My dad taught me as a little girl that you can do anything you want to do in life. I was a tomboy, so, I'd ride the bikes, and I'd, be in a boxing ring with friends of my brothers and stuff like that. So I I was kind of like a little person that grew up sort of just being a person that felt that I could do things. Everyone suffers with imposter syndrome, that was cliche, but it's true. I was sitting in a big office in Capital Radio with a whole department who I was the boss. And I'm thinking, oh. And I've always loved the team, so I've always loved being part of the team. But sometimes you have to be. It's like a funny sort of having a laugh with everyone and enjoying my day. So it's as a woman, it's a privilege that I've been.
And I think Black Deer really did arrive at the right time. There was, and I think continues to be, such a growing fan base of country and Americana. But like you said earlier, first, people's guilty pleasure. They're really owning that they were a country fan. Whereas now.
Yeah, they used to almost whisper.
Yeah, they used to always whisper and be like, who? What's that? And I think that's the question about late 20s, and this is the first, and I think if only the only festival that I've gone to that is really welcoming towards families and children. Every year I've gone to the festival, there's been like an instruments tent, there's been den building, there's been art workshops, which you don't see at like festivals like Glastonbury. Don't you see it at Country? What made you make that decision to make the festival a bit more inclusive?
It was always. I've always loved a family party of all age groups. When you have a party and there's all age groups and everyone has the best party and everyone balances each other out and there's not that much trouble. Some families there are problems. But so to look after every person so they feel it's their festival. So when we created Young Folk, it was about creating something that it was almost a festival in itself,
yeah,
for young people. So what was going to appeal to them? How are they going to feel that they've had a great weekend rather than, oh, mum, I want to go home, or dad, how can we make that work? And that's how that evolved. It was a deliberate decision that we made to ensure that there was something for everyone. And, one of the loveliest things, there were sort of many lovely things I've been fortunate to hear. And it was a father of somebody whose dad thought he would really love it. He'd really love it. And he came in and he came to the festival for the day. And he said, I'm 83. He said, I've never been to a festival in my life. It's just like, that is so great to hear. And another person that spoke to me, she said, normally I go to festivals and the kids want to go home, they're tired. She said, it's the other way around. I'm trying to get them away from the folk area. So it was a deliberate to just have stuff to entertain kids, like parties and stuff like that. It was to create them where they feel that they were really doing sort of some great stuff themselves.
I think, speaking of families, aspects and tributes to your own family are woven throughout the festival as well. I know that there's a bar at the festival called Hayley's Bar. Could you maybe share the story behind that bar?
Obviously I told you about the tragedy of my brother, Chris, and his name's Chris Hayley. And so when we were creating venues, places to be part of the festival, we dedicated Hayley's, we named it, and inside the venue, because we create a venue, it's got great music playing, and the best party to be had is in Hayley's. And on the wall there is an iconic picture of my brother with his friend, because it's like a beautiful picture of him with all his mates, just natural playing their instruments. So it kind of like feels, no matter how we configure the site, and things change, evolve over the years. So that bar Hayley's Bar doesn't look like the same Hayley's Bar it was in 2018. It's different. Yeah. But that picture just brings it all into, like, where you go, yes, this is Hayley's Bar. And people, and what's lovely, artists who get to know the story of the reason it's called Hayley's, they sometimes they're on stage and they dedicate to one of their songs to my brother and stuff like that is priceless, you know. You know, gradually people that come to the festival understand some of the history. Not everyone, it might be ceramic, but, you know, and history feels to play.
The window in a pouring rain, waking up to drive a poor boy insane. I need some sunlight. I need some sunlight. Let it light me cold. Let it in my bones so cold. The sunlight. I need the sunlight.
Stood strong before COVID. I think it still stands strong after COVID. However, what was that kind of time like? What was going through your mind during the pandemic, a time where we didn't even know when or even if live music would ever return?
It was absolutely... Can you imagine? You've started a festival and it's gained momentum in year one. Like, people were loving it. By year two, 2019, it was growing. It doubled in size. What a 20, really, you get, you know, the same momentum was building, and then suddenly it couldn't happen. And you kind of, you know, knew that you was on a precipice, really, because you're holding people's early bird tickets, because lots of people bought early bird tickets, and you have to refund them. We wouldn't have spent the money anyway, but, you know, knowing that you had that money to give back. And what was really heartening was very, very... We had, I think, an 82% retention of people holding their tickets, keeping their tickets with us, trusting that we'd get through COVID and that they would be able to come to the festival. And unfortunately, it was the next year didn't happen. 2020 didn't happen. Everyone had that year when nothing happened. And then 2021, we planned as a festival, because our festival was early in the calendar. And the Prime Minister Boris said, oh, the end of COVID is this date. They're going to be this day and that. So we, and we've got investors who obviously have helped with subsidising the festival in the growth years. We took a gamble, I suppose, but we thought a calculated risk to put the festival on in 2021 on our dates. And it was a 4 weeks initially before the curfew fit, when the curfew finished. Then Boris done it for another 2 weeks, and then we was building on site. So we was building our festival site, and then there was this thing that they were going to extend it for another 4 weeks, and we'd spent a lot of money. Yeah. Can you imagine after nearly two years that all the suppliers were on site? They were so excited. The atmosphere at the festival was unbelievable, and I'm on site from day one till the festival finishes, and it was like a party every night. It was, oh, we can't wait, it's gonna be great, it's a festival. And then he pulled the plug, and we was at that point the most safe place with COVID. That we had everything in place, it was great. But he pulled the plug, and the festival, and we had to, it was like someone had died. All the suppliers were just looking down, and it was the atmosphere was so sad. And I'm going, it's all right. And they was all like being so lovely to me. And but it didn't happen. But you know, the most frustrating thing was the TV camera decided, because it was a story, you know, but filming me. Answer whether it could go ahead or not. It was just like, and you know, you work in, you put up, and then obviously our company said, "Oh, we want the cameras. Can we film it?" I had a camera on me when the decision was made, and I cried. I mean, I couldn't help it. I just got all tears in my eyes, and it was just not a great time. But what was really cool was the next day, all speaking events. It was unbelievable. So we had a lot of recovery. We had, and then we couldn't put it on until 2022. So yeah, it was hard. It was really
hard. Now, obviously, the festival is definitely back. It's yeah. So strong this year, and there's not only going to be Sheryl Crow headlining, which we will talk about in a minute, but there's also going to be the Western AF takeover stage. What is the concept behind all of this?
Okay, so it's like a brilliant online platform that showcases some of the exciting up-and-coming artists within the genre that we obviously celebrate as Black Deer. They're US-based, but they want to dip into the UK market. So they reached out to us, and we've given them the takeover of one of the days on Hayley's. So they're bringing three up-and-coming artists and acts with them. So it's early stages of that relationship. We're hoping to build in the future. So it's an exciting new part of the festival. And I think, you know, the festival, people that have been to the festival before, it's going to look a bit different again this year. We've taken on a company to manage the whole thing for us, because I'm developing other arms of Black Deer, which is going to be very exciting. But the festival is pretty much where I wanted it to be. Last year was my magic year, where I felt that I'd got the positioning, the size, diet and everything how I wanted it to be. But it's good for someone to come in with fresh eyes and, you know, look at it and you know, there'll be some changes, but there won't be bad changes. There'll still be all Hayley's, Live Fire, Young Folk, Stage, you know, but it might feel a little bit different this year, but that's good. You know, it's good to change things up. People want that. And yeah, I think it's going to be a very enjoyable year. And it's going to be really enjoyable for me because I'm not going to be working all weekend. I can actually come out and enjoy the festival. So it's going to be fun.
And there is such a broad range of stages over the festival. How do you keep up with staying in the know of the latest country and Americana artists who you know are going to work?
Well, you know, we were very fortunate in the first few years of Black Deer to have a booker, Bev Burton, who was the three ladies together. And she had a great ear for music. But bringing in the company that we've brought in now, who's umbrella in the whole thing, you know, everyone... they artists, but we used to, three of us, go out to Nashville, pick artists. It was a really, really exciting time. But the guys who are doing the booking for us now, they look at, as we do, at all what's going to be the next big name that's coming in. Who, you know, not the headliners necessarily, but the ones underneath. How can we showcase some fantastic artists, you know? And someone said that, you come to Black Deer to find music you love or artists that you already love, but you're going to find music that you're going, you know, you're going to, that's going to be your future favourite artist. And that's, you know, very true. People discover stuff at Black Deer that they never realised that they would absolutely love and become big fans of artists that are there.
And the legendary Bob Harris, he's also going to be there. He's going to be curating and hosting the Under the Apple Tree stage over the weekend too. How did you first meet him and how was that conversation about suggesting that he curate the stage?
Well, that was year one. In 2018, they did do an Under the Apple Tree session, and then through circumstances, they didn't do it. I can't remember the detail of it. I think they were booked elsewhere, and so it was year one, but they've come back this year, which is great. Bob Harris is just like, I absolutely adore that man. He's absolutely, I call him Cheeky Chop because he's just the big legend that's Bob Harris called Cheeky Chop, because he's just this absolutely brilliant man. And he's a joy. He's a joy to be around. So I'm super excited he's coming back this year.
And then obviously this year's been headlined by the one and only Sheryl Crow.
Yeah.
What kind of songs are you looking forward to her performing?
Oh, I mean, like, there's so many, isn't there? Yeah, with Sheryl Crow, you're kind of listening, then you listen, go, oh, my God, I know that one, I know that one, I know that one. Every Day's a Winding Road is one of my favourites because that's what life is, isn't it? You know, you never know what's going to happen in any day. You wake up in the morning and you go, right, okay. And then all the twists and turns that can happen in a day. So it's kind of like that's one of my little favourites of hers. But there's so many amazing songs. So I think people are going to love her.
Thank you for your time and for joining us on tonight's broadcast. I really, really highly recommend all our listeners going to check out the festival this year. So my last question for you, I guess, is for any newcomers of the festival, what would you recommend are the three most can't-miss things that they should check out this year?
Okay, so that's a really difficult one because there's so many. I recommend you check out Super Jam Stage, which is a stage with kids who have fallen through the education system who are now at these amazing colleges that they are thriving in, and Black Deer and Super Jam have joined together and it's their stage. And we've got some great artists on there, really great artists. Live Fire is unbelievable. Chili eating competitions and stuff goes on, low and slow cooking, music. You know, they are really highlights of people's day who don't want to just be listening to music all the time, you know. There's music in every corner. Hayley's Bar obviously is the party. Go and have a party. You've got Main Stage Ridge. There's so many. We've got Cafe Nero coming back, who you go and have a nice chilled out coffee in the morning. There's music playing in the Cafe Nero area. So there's just so much that you can enjoy that you don't, you know, some people hang out in the same area all the time, which is great as well. But yeah, I'd recommend you go around and take time to go and visit.
Nine-time Grammy winner and Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, 2024's Black Deer headliner act, Sheryl Crow. Her first nine studio albums have sold over 35 million copies worldwide. Seven have charted in the top 10 and five were certified for multi-platinum sales. She's going to be performing just across the bridge in Tunbridge Wells. Black Deer weekend tickets are still available. One act that I'm looking forward to seeing this year, of course, besides Sheryl Crow, I've been a fan of hers since she featured on the Carl soundtrack back in 2006. But another artist that I'm set on seeing that weekend is an artist called Lizzie Moe. She is a New York singer-songwriter, artist and guitarist. You could say that she makes Americana music in that her work pulls from the rhythms and traditions of blues music, folk and country, not unlike the artists of whom she's most often compared to, such as Alison Russell, Rhiannon Giddens and Adina Victoria. This is a track of hers which I've been listening to on repeat non-stop, and this is Eliza Know with Please Change Your Mind.
You can get on a train, take it to another town, leave your friends behind. And you could even change your clothes, throw away your blue jeans, trade them for a suit and tie. But after all this time, I'm still getting used to having you around. So please don't change your mind. Change your mind about me. And don't ever set me aside with the things you don't need. It's alright if you want to start again on a little piece of land. Watch the way things grow. And I could even follow you there. I could keep the fire lit, forget what I used to know. I might like the way your face turns brown in the summer when we're living out in the sun. So please don't change your mind. Change your mind about me. And don't ever set me aside with things you
song I finally reach the West Coast, maybe then I'll just float and stay for a while. Maybe I'll get back on the line. For a man like me, there's room to breathe. Being on my own is where I feel free. I decide where I'm going.
Alone again, just how you left me. I'm worse for the way you're gone. Ain't it just like me to let you close when you're not there? I get wiser with every dream. All of this blue has got me to think. How empty the bottle, how tall the glass. I'll never be the one that you dream of. I should be to this hurt.
Been listening to The Night Shift on Phoenix 98 FM, your weekly dose of country music each and every Thursday night, 10 p.m. until midnight. Be sure to tune in again next week, where I'll be joined by Texas-born and Nashville-based artist talking about her alternative country ramble album called Highways and her Garth Brooks cover single called What She. One more track from the Black Deer lineup, though. This is Madeline clocking out The Night Shift with our last track. This is a track by Pat Reedy and a track called They Know My Name. Have a good night. Teacher.